Thank you for tuning in to our sermons at Upper Room Church. If this ministry is blessing you and you'd like to give back, or if you'd just like to learn more information about Upper Room, you can visit our website at upperroompensacola.com. Thank you.
So let's jump right into our series where we started a brand new series last week called All Things New. So brand new year, brand new series. And I hope that you were able to catch that message last week. But last week we really focused on belief and how a lot of times, I think we all do this time of year. I know I do. I'll set resolutions, and you know, about this time is when I start slipping a little bit, you know, or I'll start messing up a little bit, or I'll give in here or there, I start to really feel the grind of the resolution. And so last week we really focused on how belief, our internals, drives our behavior, our externals. And so we'll set resolutions, or I will, and to change things in my life, or you know, try to make certain things better. A lot of times, most resolutions fall in a few common buckets: financial or health, you know, spending, or maybe career or relational resolutions, things like that. But we'll set these goals to change the externals, but we don't focus on the internals first, and it's the internals that drive it. And so our theme verse is Revelation 21, verses 4 through 5. And I'm going to read this with you. And this is Jesus speaking. He says, "I'm going to wipe away all the tears from their eyes." That's a great promise right there. "There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain," talking about heaven, "for the old things, the old order of things, the former things," that's what I want to talk about this morning, the old things, "have passed away. And he who is seated on the throne said, 'Behold, I am making all things new.'" And so in order to have something new, you got to have something old, right? And I one of the things that we like to say around here is that every saint was a sinner, right? That we all have a past. We all have old things in our life, stuff that maybe we struggled with before we came to Christ, but stuff that maybe we still struggle with. I call it saints with sinners' problems. Even though that we're a Christian and we come to church, there's still things in our life, old things that try to keep coming back into our life, things that we know maybe shouldn't be there, things that we know are hurting us or harming us. And I love that the Bible talks a lot about these things, that the Bible talks a lot about, okay, there's things in our life, there's a lot of good that God offers, but there's also things in our life that we know are hurting us. We know that maybe if my life would be so much better if this wasn't there. And that thing, whatever it may be, fill in the blank, normally makes its debut on the resolution list every year because it's a struggle or something maybe we've had for a while. And I found in my life that there's some things that God will just deliver you from completely. And then there's some things that we got to walk out of it, right? There's some things that it's the process of sanctification where it doesn't just completely go away. You know, like the children of Israel were delivered from Pharaoh in the Old Testament. Beautiful portrait of salvation. They came through the Red Sea, right? A portrait of being saved. But then they get into the wilderness, and now they're struggling with internal things. They're struggling with just being under that rule of Pharaoh for so long. They're struggling with these mental things. They're wanting to go back and be in slavery. So they're wanting to go back to this person that basically had their life, you know, was controlling their life. And I think we all have some kind of form of that in our lives. And normally it'll pop up this time of year because it's something that we maybe have struggled with for a while. And the big overarching theme I want to submit during this whole series is that I think it's good to set resolutions. I think it's good to set goals. I have, you know, goals on, we all want to get better, and we have different areas of our life that we want to get better. But I really believe that I know this is like the preacher thing to say, but if you get better spiritually, every aspect of your life will get better. I believe that 100%. That if you've got goals that are related to your health, if you get better spiritually, I believe your health will get better. I believe if you got goals related to your finances, maybe you want to save more money, you want to get out of debt this year, whatever, that if you get better spiritually, that what happens is every area of your life begins to get better. And so my goal is to try to get you to start with the spiritual growth. And so that's why we're doing the 21 days of fasting right now. And we're on day 7. And my mom came over last night, and she said, or we weren't normally we're drinking coffee or eating cake or Oreos. You know, I'm like, I'll do a line every night, a line of Oreos, double stuff before I go to sleep. And so we weren't doing our normal snacking. She's like, "What's going on?" There's, you know, and I said, "We're fasting." She's like, "Oh, that started already?" I'm like, "Yeah, it started." So it's all good if you haven't joined in. But the goal of fasting is just that simple fact that we lay down some things so that we can grow spiritually. And today, though, what I want to try to do is I want to try to connect those two, because I think they all are together. That our spiritual life impacts our physical life. Our physical life impacts our spiritual life. I heard a prayer of a New Year's prayer. This person prayed that in 2020, they want their bank account to be fat and their body to be thin. And Lord, please don't let it be in reverse like it was last year. And so I feel like if maybe you have started off in the right direction and you seem to get held back every time, or you've got resolutions that keep showing up that you can't get past, this is the message for you this morning. And so what I really like about especially the New Testament is that God uses imperfect people to do his work. And God uses everyday ordinary people just like me and you. And what I love about this guy named Paul is we're gonna read from his book in Romans 7, is that Paul had a really, really dark past. But Paul was one of those guys where I feel like if we were at a meeting today, he's one of those guys or girls that you may have that is just completely 100% honest. They don't have a filter, you know what I'm saying? They exactly what they're thinking, they say it, they wear their heart on their sleeve. And you can feel it in his writing. You can sense it. He doesn't hold anything back. And in Romans, he really writes about this struggle between good and evil inside of ourselves. And he writes about it within his own life. The struggle of the old me and the new me. You know, the struggle of depending on, you know, if you cut me off in traffic, if you get the old me, you're going to get one response. If you get the new me, you know, hopefully I can just put my head down and keep driving. But so he talks about this gap and how there's this process that's going on inside of all of us. And it's before I read it, is one thing I want to really draw out really quickly is that our bodies are more than just bodies, that we are made up of what I believe is three different categories. We're triune beings. C.S. Lewis says it like this, that we're spirits that have a soul and live in a body. And so he was one of the greatest, you know, one of the greatest thinkers of the last 100 years. And so he wrote a lot about how the spiritual part of our lives is the most important part of our lives. And so we know that our bodies don't live forever. You know, from ashes to ashes, dust to dust, they return to the earth. What's from the earth returns to the earth. That's our bodies. And then what's from God returns to God. And in Genesis, we were just clay until God breathed into man. And it says man became a living soul. And so it's these parts of our lives. So we're it's like an egg, right? It's an egg, but there's a shell, and then there's the white part, I don't know what that's called, and then there's the yolk. You know, there's three layers of who we are. And so what I'm finding in my life is that is the loudest part of who I am is my body. Your body wants to be in control. Your body likes to react. Your body likes things at a certain time in a certain way. You know, your body is the loudest part of us. I felt like my soul and spirit, I feel like a lot of times I got to get quiet to really connect with God, or if I really want to hear from God. But your body will let you know when it's hungry, right? And your body will let you know when it's thirsty, and your body will let you know when you're mad, and your body will let you know when something hurts. And so our body tries to take over a lot of times. And the Bible calls that just living in the carnal, living in the flesh. We all have it. We all have that tendency, if we get mad, to say things we didn't mean. I did it last week, okay? y'all pray for me. I'm working on that. We all have the tendency that our body has a desire to do something that we know we shouldn't do, and we know it's probably wrong, and we know it's going to hurt us, but our body, when it wants something, it wants something. And so the Bible talks about how we should kill the desires of the flesh. So there's good desire, there's bad desire. And that bad desire is always kind of there. I think it was Dietrich Bonhoeffer said that opportunity knocks, but temptation leans on the doorbell, right? It doesn't go away. And so Paul writes, he writes about this in Romans, and I'm going to read Romans. The whole chapter is really about this thought. But he says, I've got the desire to do what is good. I want to lose weight. How about that? I want to get in better shape. I don't want to drink so much. I don't want to eat so bad. I don't want to get angry, so angry that I lose my temper. You know, we all have that part of our life. And Paul's writing, I have the desire. I want to get better. I know what I struggle with. I know what my weaknesses are. I've got the desire to do what's good, but I just can't do it. I can't carry it out. For what I do is not the good I want to do. So the things that I know are good, I don't do. But the evil that I don't want to do, I keep falling into the same trap. I keep going in circles. Now, if I do what I do not want to do, it is no longer me, but it's sin that's living inside of me. So he identifies what's going on. He says there's something inside. There's this desire that's not holy. It's unhealthy. It's not from God. And it keeps trying to call the shots in my life. Again, do I have one witness in here, right? I love that Paul writes about this stuff. He doesn't, you know, sometimes you could think that the people that wrote the Bible or were just, you know, they didn't have any, temptation wasn't really a thing for them. But we're reading here, Paul writes about it. And he refers to it in several other books that he writes. He calls, you know, calls it a thorn in the flesh, this thing that he struggles with. And then he goes on and he does, I think, what we all do. He starts beating himself up. Verse 24 says, what a wretched man I am. You ever done that? You just make the same mistake and you're like, what am I doing? Right? Why in the world am I still falling into the same hole? What a wretched man I am. Who will rescue me from this body of death? He calls it. An accountability partner will do it. Or maybe I should pray more. Maybe I should go to church more. He doesn't say that. Look at what he says. I love this. He says, but thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. Right? He's saying there's hope in him. That I've fallen short so many times in this area. I've tried so much. I've tried to be more disciplined. I've gotten all this help externally. I've written down my resolutions, but it's just not helping. But he says there's help in Christ. And so that's what I really want. I want to focus on today. And so is there an area of my life where my body's calling the shots? Is there an area of my life where there's this unhealthy desire that's there and I keep going back to it and I keep going back to it? And so what happens when I do that? I know for me personally, number one is when I give into unhealthy desires, it destroys me. It hurts me. It hurts my body. Not only that, but what I put in my body or the things I decide to look at or to view or to click on, it's going to hurt not only my body, but it hurts my soul. It hurts my spirit. And Paul writes about it. He says it like this. He says, you know, and again, I don't want you to feel like this is a legalistic message because it's not. And Paul was one of the greatest writers when it comes to freedom. And so he was, you know, one whole book, we studied it a couple summers ago, the book of Galatians, is about the freedom that we have in Christ. And he says, 1 Corinthians, he says, you know, everything is permissible. So I'm not saying I can't do this, but not everything is good, right? It's not beneficial. Everything is permissible for me, but I will not be mastered by anything. I love that. And so is there things in my life that are trying to master me? And a lot of times we don't know it until we lay it down. Cheese sticks were mastering my life, y'all, okay? Seriously. Gushers were mastering. I mean, I feel like I need to, you know, just laying down certain foods, I realize my body is craving things, you know, that are not good for it. And so the same way, like last year, I didn't really fast. I fasted a little bit of food, but I laid down social media. I was like, I'm getting off social media. And you ever heard of like phantom beeps and buzzes? I kept feeling my phone doing all this weird stuff. I'd go to a stoplight and I'd pull my phone to look at like Instagram. I mean, I'm just gonna be real with you. Look at social media and it wasn't there. And that happened for days. And it had become such a part of my life, and I didn't realize it. Until I said, okay, I'm not going to do this. And so what's the power of this 21 days is that it's kind of putting a line in the sand and saying, okay, I'm not going to do this But I'm going to, and instead of doing this, I'm going to feed my spirit man, right? Instead of getting on social media for an hour and a half a day, I'm going to get on this Bible reading plan, or I'm going to do something that's feeding my spirit and feeding my soul. And again, a lot of times this stuff that tries to master our lives is not always bad stuff. It can be really good stuff. You know, like for me, about a year into becoming a Christian, the Lord just really clearly told me I needed to lay down surfing. And I thought like, man, I'm just hearing things. This can't be God. You know what I'm saying? But then when I did, I did for a full year, and then I realized, like, I had quit three jobs over surfing. Three. Like, if the surf was good, I didn't go to work, you know? And, like, today, if I was still in that mindset, I wouldn't be here this morning. I must be honest with you. I had to pray about that this morning, you know? I know the best surf this year have been on Sunday mornings. I'm like, come on, God. Can't we do Saturday or Sunday afternoon, you know? But, you know, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have showed up this morning. I mean, I miss Thanksgivings. I miss Christmases. Like, you know, I'll never forget my brother, before he could drive, I was supposed to go pick him up, take him to Thanksgiving at my aunt's house. And they didn't eat Thanksgiving until 6 o'clock because that's when I got there. Because that's after I got through surfing in Destin all day. And I came. And so it was, again, it controlled my life. I'll just say that. But it's a good thing. It's a great thing. And I think God wants us to have good things, but he doesn't want good things to have us. And that's the temptation. And that's why it's I'm not just talking about, you know, things that are hurting us, but it can be good things that is kind of our world will begin to revolve around. And so fasting is just saying, I'm going to lay this stuff down. I don't want my heart to get attached to anything on this earth. I don't want my life revolving around anything that's temporary, that can be taken from me in a moment, right? And so growing up, I grew up on this dirt road, Maggie Lane and off Robinson Point, and about once a year we'd get big old dump loads of dirt. And so we'd play this. We didn't have anything else to do. We'd play this game called King of the Hill. You ever heard of that? None of y'all heard of that. That's what we did in Baghdad, Florida, growing up. We didn't have Xboxes and Nintendos. We played on dirt hills, okay? And so King of the Hill was basically this. It basically was whoever could stay at the top was the King of the Hill. And so we, all the, you know, kids in my neighborhood would just, we'd throw each other off the hill, you know, we'd hit each other with bikes. And honestly, but we would do whatever we needed to do to be the last person on the top of the hill. And I think when it comes to our soul and our body and our spirit, it's kind of a game of King of the Hill. And the strongest, I never won because I was a little runt, all right? I was like 4 foot tall until 10th grade, 11th grade. But the strongest part of our body is going to be what wins. And so we got this soul, we got the spirit, we got this body, and they're all kind of fighting for first place. And so one of the great things, and again, I'm just want to challenge you about this fast, is what it does is it's kind of saying, all right, I'm gonna starve my body a little bit because I don't want it to be the strongest voice in my life. I don't want it to be the king. I don't want to just make decisions based on what feels good or what I need or what's convenient. I'm gonna lay that part of my life down, and I'm gonna feed my spirit and my soul. All right. The second thing, what happens when we let our body calls the shots, is it dilutes our witness. It dilutes our witness, and I think what a lot of times we can feel like nobody is watching our lives or nobody's impacted by our lives. But I want to remind you that what you do and the life that you live really impacts a lot of people. And even if you live alone and you don't have many friends and you and your family's disconnected, I can promise you, your life impacts a lot of people. And that's why I think the enemy fights us so hard a lot of times. And so your life impacts so many people, and they're watching. And so they're watching our lives, they're watching how we live, and so they're seeing how we react. And I didn't realize how big of a deal this was until I had a little, you know, I've got a little 3-year-old running around now. And he doesn't do what I say. He does what I do. Like, he is like a sponge. And our lives are the same way, that there are people, whether we like it or not, that are watching. I'm sending some people some W-2s from last year that were in my business all last year and shouldn't have been. But I've seen that joke. I'm like, I'm going to use that somewhere. So yeah, anyways, but whether you realize it or not, and you know some who are, they're watching your life. They're watching how you react. They're watching how you cope. They're watching how you deal with life. And so we want to do things the way that God has called us to do things. And so the way Paul says in 2 Corinthians, he says, we're taking great pains to do what is right. I'm striving to do what is right, not only in the eyes of the Lord, but also in the eyes of men. And so we want to live a life that's attractive, right? We want to live a life that people want to live the way that we are living. And so if we let our bodies call the shot, if we react all the time, if we're always upset, always down, always angry, right? You know, we'll find that people don't really want to be around us. You know, people don't want to be around the negative Nancy, come on, or Debbie Downer, or, you know, and so we want to try to live above that. So, and then the last thing, what happens when I let my body call the shots, again, this is the last one, it dishonors God, is what happens. What does that mean? It dishonors God. And I think for a long time, you know, even in the Old Testament, God lived in tabernacles. He lived in buildings. You know, they had the Ark of the Covenant. You had the Holy of Holies. And David started this house, and his son finished this house where God lived. But that's not the same. It's not like that anymore. God doesn't live in stained glass. God, there's nothing holy about this building. There's nothing holy about any church on the planet. And there's beautiful churches. I'm thankful for them. And I think that there's, I'm not knocking that, but God doesn't live in a building. The building now is you. It's your body is the temple. Your body is where the Holy Spirit, now when you say yes to Jesus, he comes and he lives inside of your body. He's inside of you. And so no longer does he live in buildings. And what that means is if we look at our bodies that way, like I know growing up in church, there were certain things I just wouldn't do. I was raised Catholic. You know, we weren't allowed to wear hats. Come on. Like we had reverence when we went to church. We dressed up. We had reverence for the building. And I think that's good to do. But what if we looked at our bodies that way? Okay, so if my body is the temple, my body is the temple of the Holy Spirit, maybe I shouldn't do a line of Oreos tonight. Maybe I should be more conscious of what I'm putting in it. Maybe I should be a little more conscious of what I'm watching and of what I'm allowing inside of my mind. And so what I'm really praying for, and I know I have already made this decision, there's some things that I have cut out of my life the last week that are not going to come back in, right? That maybe there's some things that you're laying down right now during this time of fasting that you've realized, you know, I think my life is probably better without 4 hours of Netflix a day. You know, I think I could get a little more done, or maybe, you know, I think my life is a little better if I'm not on social media so much. I'm not comparing my life to other people's highlight reels so much. And so the goal is that over this time, that as we lay things down, maybe there's some things that we just are not going to pick back up because they're not helping us. Right, they're not moving the ball down the field, and so here we go. I want to really, the message I wanted to bring, the title was a new body, because that's what God offers to us, and Paul writes about this in 1 Timothy. And so this time of year, a lot of us we're setting resolutions around getting healthier, and I think that's great, and we should do that. And Paul talks about this in 1 Timothy 4 verse 8. He says, you know, physical training has value, but he says, but godliness, right, it's focusing on the spiritual part of our lives, has value for all things. Every area of our life will begin to get better, holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. Godliness, and that word, I had to look it up. I'm like, what does that mean? It means just having a Godward attitude. That when we begin to implement some things in our life, some spiritual practices in our life, instead of focusing so much on the externals, I'm going to focus on the internals. And so I want to give you four questions, four principles, I believe, that are spiritual principles, but they will help you in all areas of your life. Four questions. And these are questions that I got to ask my own self, because I know that there's areas of my life that need to improve. Four questions, I think, that will, spiritual principles that will help us get physically fit. I'll just say it like that. And so the first question is am I offering daily? Daily. Now, what does that mean? Am I offering daily? Paul writes about it in Romans 12, verse 1. And so he says, what is worship? Worship is, a lot of times we can think worship is what we do here on Sundays. And I think it's an expression of worship, and it's very needed. But true worship, Paul, according to Paul, is I urge you, he says, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your body as a living sacrifice, which is holy and pleasing to God. He says, this right here, this is your spiritual act of worship. And what it is by offering is it's saying, okay, Lord, try at some point in your day, making it a priority, say, okay, God, I'm number one, I'm gonna give you my mind. Because there's thoughts that I think one of the biggest battlefield for most Christians, and I know for my life, is right here. It's not so much what goes on around me, it's my mind. And so what I say by offering daily is it's at some point in my routine every day, Lord, I'll give you my mind today. Lord, I just want to think your thoughts. I know your thoughts are higher than mine. Lord, help me not to get into that stinking thinking. Come on, somebody. Help me not ruminate on what's bad in my life, what's negative in my life. This isn't on your handout, Philippians 4. Whatever is true, right? Whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, lovely, admirable, Philippians 4, verse 8. Think on these things. And so this isn't just one time. This is every day. Every day. I'm trying my best. I can't say I have conquered this. But in the mornings, to make this the first thing that I do. Is Lord, I give you my mind. I give you my thoughts. God, help me, Lord, to make the best decisions today. Help me to think that your thoughts and not my own. So I'm offering my mind. The second thing is I'm offering my mouth. Because my mouth can get me in trouble, all right? Maybe yours can't, but mine can. Lord, help me to just speak only good things today over people. Lord, help me to just speak only what is encouraging to people. God, help me to just speak what's your thoughts and what you think towards me over my own life today. Right? Again, this isn't in your handout. Ephesians 4, verse 29. But don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful for building others up. Right, let me be a Tigger today, okay? I'm just going to come on the scene at work, and I'm just going to speak life, and I'm going to speak hope, and I'm going to speak strength. And I know this sounds silly, but I mean, it sets the pace for the whole day. You know, and that's why I think, you know, even in the mornings, I can get in a bad habit of I like to sleep, y'all, okay? You know, and when we start our days kind of late, we don't have margin, we're already kind of speaking negativity over life. I'm going to be late today. Man, the boss is going to be upset. I'm not going to have time to eat. I'm going to be starving all morning. You know, like we're already speaking negative over our day, and it's kind of painting the canvas. So let's try to flip the script a little bit. You know, I'm late today. I'm going to pick up some donuts because I'm already late. Come on, somebody. And I'm going to be that guy that comes in with donuts this morning. So let's flip the script a little bit. I'm going to use my mouth to do only what's honoring, what's building people up, because the reality is there's enough negativity in the world. I don't want to add to it. There's enough negativity. You don't have to go or look very far to find it. So let Proverbs talks about how our mouths can be a well of life, a spring of life. Lord, I'm praying that over my words today. If I can't say anything nice, I'm just going to keep my mouth closed. Come on, somebody, right? I'm not going to say anything at all. And then the next thing is my motives, my mind, my mouth, my motives. Lord, let my motives be pure today. Let my motives be pure, God. Let my motives be your motives. Don't let me do anything out of selfish ambition. Don't let me do anything that's so focused on me, but let my motives, God, be focused on your kingdom and what you would have for me to do. And so starting our days, and one thing I'm noticing, and I'm a student of leadership. I like to study leadership and people that are leading companies and leading churches well. And I have found almost every single person, every single one of them, that the common thread in their life, those that are successful in the area of business or in church leadership, whatever they do, is they have mastered their mornings. Like, they do these things first. And so I have a bad habit of trying to fit these things in last, okay? You know, I get up and, you know, I hit the snooze, all right, wash my hair in the sink, let's go. In the car, I don't do that quite as much anymore, but that's kind of the pace I lived at for a long time. Or I didn't wash my hair at all, you know what I'm saying? I wanted to see how long I could go without washing my hair one time. I think I'm like 2 weeks. Y'all didn't need to know that, did you? But I surfed a lot, okay? I surf a lot, so I figured the salt water. But anyways, we live in such. Come on, gotta get it. One amen, right? I don't think we're supposed to wash it every day. Have you read what's on the back of that shampoo bottle? Like, I can't pronounce this stuff. I'd just rather be greasy, you know what I'm saying? And anyways, margin, conquering your mornings. I think it sets the pace for the whole day. And so I can't say I have done this my whole life, but I've done pretty good this week. Okay, the first thing I do now is I don't get on Instagram or Facebook or my phone or check emails. I'm going through the one-year Bible. I read that. I start my mornings with this right here. I offer my mind. I offer myself, and it's helped me tremendously. Okay, so the second thing is, am I withdrawing regularly? Am I withdrawing regularly? And so there's never been more research and science to back up how much stress is harming people in today's society. That stress is like the new silent killer, because we don't stop. You know, we don't get off the wheel. And so we're going constantly. We go on vacation, we're still tethered to the phone, we're still having to field emails, we're still having to be available just in case, right? And so withdrawing regularly, and what I mean by this is basically it's just honoring the Sabbath. And that doesn't mean go to church more. Church is not the Sabbath. Sabbath means, it literally means to cease and desist. Whatever you do Monday through Friday, there's one day of the week that you don't do that, or whatever your job is, whatever your schedule is, whatever your occupation is, there's a day in the week where you set it down. And I didn't come up with this. There's three things. It was Rick Warren. He preached a message on Sabbath and how to honor the Sabbath. And he gave three things. He said the first thing is every day. It's a part of our routine. Is we divert daily, divert daily. That means at some point of my at some point during the day I'm getting quiet. Some point during the day I'm going to put my phone down, or I'll put my phone on do not disturb, and for 15 minutes I'm going to be untethered from all this. And I'm gonna read, or I'm gonna put on a worship song, or some point during the day I'm diverting with solitude. I'm getting quiet. You know, I'm gonna go somewhere. You know, Jesus did this all the time. He would just disappear, wouldn't tell anybody where he was going. You know, even the disciples were like, Jesus is gone. Where is he at? You know, he went up on a mountain, or he's in a boat, or he's in a garden, and he would do this. And every day, I think it's so important that, because you got a lot of decisions that you got to make. You got a lot of pressure on your life. You got a lot of people that need you. And so diverting daily helps you to get your mind clear, helps you to get focused. There's this principle called the Parkinson's principle. And basically it says that work expands to fill up all the available time. There's always going to be something to do. Always. There's always going to be a reason not to do that. There's always going to be a reason not to set my phone down. I'm going to go for a drive. I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to go down. You know, there's always going to be something to do. The Parkinson's principle. Work will just expand to fill up the available time. And so what we have to do is we have to create time where we're not available. This is me time. Come on, somebody. Divert daily. Withdraw weekly. Withdraw weekly. That's the Sabbath. That's a full day where I'm withdrawing from what I do Monday through Friday. Again, that doesn't mean going to church. We were taught that Sabbath means you can't do anything but go to church. The church I became a Christian in, they gave me a hard time they told me I couldn't come surfing on Sundays. That's violating the Sabbath. You know, like you were supposed to just go to church, eat, and sleep. That's all you could do, you know, but I don't think that that's what it means. I think Sabbath means the only key for Sabbath is you're not doing what you normally do during the week. So you're not filled in those emails, you're not answering those calls, you're withdrawing away from what you do. Anybody getting anything out of this? It's withdrawing. I'm telling you that because stress is killing people. Stress is causing, they're connecting all kinds of bad things in our bodies, sickness to stress. And so it's not that the workload's going to get any lighter. It's just a lot of times we have to draw a line in the sand and say, I'm going to take a break. If the place burns down, call the fire department. You know what I'm saying? Here's the number. Call them. You know what I mean? You've got to get to the point where you can do that. And then the third level of this, which is incredible, I've never quite been able to do this, is abandoning annually. And so in the Bible, there is this principle called the year of Jubilee. And it's the same thing as the Sabbath. The Sabbath is on the seventh day. Well, in that time, the year of Jubilee is the seventh year. And so what they would do is if they would only cultivate the field, they would, you know, they would only plant crops for 6 years in a field, because they knew if they didn't let the field rest for 1 year, it would stop producing. And so they called it the year of Jubilee. And so a sabbatical basically means it's, last year I think I got a little short version of it, but I had never taken two Sundays off in a row, like in like 11 years or something. It'd been a long time. And once I hit the first Sunday and I knew this, like I didn't have to speak, and then I hit Monday and I knew I didn't have to speak again, it was like, this is incredible. You know, I'm like, this feels really good, you know. And now they're seeing a lot of companies are starting to give sabbatical leaves, because they know that taking a month off, and if you've built a company and you run a company, that's hard to do because you feel like you got to always be there. And what I'm finding is that some of the greatest companies, and Yvon Chouinard is one of them. He started Patagonia. He leaves now for 6 months. He's like, he's in Jackson Hole 6 months a year. He's like, I may check my phone, I may not. You know, it's like, you know, but he started the company that way. He would take a month and go climbing. Hey, you got it. I'm not going to be available, but I'll be back in a month, you know. And so I think what happens is when we do that, when we're not there working, guess who is? God. And God can raise up other people to do those things that we thought, I have to be here to do. This is not going to get done if I'm not here. And you'd be surprised that when you withdraw, or when you abandon annually, and I'm not saying you can do this every year, you'll be really surprised not only what it does in your life spiritually, but also within the organization or what you lead. People will begin to step up. All right, so that's the second one. Third one is am I living purposely? And I'm moving quickly. Am I living purposely? Am I living in my purpose? And I think I talk about this almost every week, but I can't really say enough about it, because I feel like so much of our life and a lot of the externals and things that we struggle with really begin to come into focus and really just will fall off of our lives when we're living in our purpose, living on mission. That I know what I'm here to do. I know what a touchdown is in my life. This is where I'm heading. This is what God's called me to do. This is where God has called me to go. And if you really want to see things in your life, like maybe things that keep showing up on the resolution list begin to fall off, it's get something bigger than yourself to live for. It's focusing on purpose. It's focusing on, okay, this is what God's put me here to do. And Paul writes about this in 1 Corinthians. I'm going to read it very quickly. He says, don't you know that in a race, all runners run, but only one gets the prize? So he says, running away is to get the prize. Everybody who competes in these games, you know, they go through training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. And this is what I want you to really focus on. Therefore, I do not run like a man running aimlessly. He's like, I know where I'm going. I know my purpose. I know what I'm here to do. I don't fight like somebody beating the air. But instead, I'm living with a target. I'm living with the end in mind. And so today is a great day if you're like, I have no clue what my purpose is. I don't know what my giftings are, spiritual gifts. Today is a perfect day for you to try out Growth Track. Because today we're going through the spiritual gifts analysis. We're doing the disc test. And I know I talk about this every week, but I believe in it because it's changed my life. And I've watched so many people go through that one step of Growth Track, and they're like, wow, I didn't realize that, man, these are my spiritual gifts. This is kind of the area. This is my sweet spot. This is what I'm good at. This is what God has placed in my life, the giftings and the talents. And sometimes we can just not know. I didn't know for a long time. And so I want to challenge you. Growth Track, I know you hear it a lot, but today is the day. Right after the second service, you should try it out. And give it a shot. And basically, this is the greatest tool that I have found to help us find what our purpose is. And then here's the last one. Okay, this is the last one. Spiritual principles, number four. Am I surrendering fully? Am I surrendering fully? Am I trying to fight things in my life in my own strength? Am I trying to fight things in my life with just self-discipline? Am I trying to set more rules for myself? Am I trying to focus on the externals first? And so when I think about this, I think about, you know, a large portion of my life, I remember what it's like to be addicted to something. I remember what it's like to be a slave to something, for my life to revolve around something, that this is all I can think about. This is all I can focus on. I got to have this in my life. And some of you may have never struggled with that, but some of you may know somebody who has. And I know for me, I was the best quitter you'd ever meet in your life. I quit like 30 times. I'd quit every other week, you know, and I kept finding myself, I wasn't able to get past it. And I kept picking it back up, and I kept picking it back up, and I kept picking it back up. And it wasn't until I encountered a power greater than myself. It wasn't until this point in my life where I finally just, and I can't say that there's like a, I don't think there's a formula to this. I think what happens is we get so tired of going through the, you know, falling into the same thing over and over and over, that finally we say, okay, I'm just gonna, I'm surrendering this. Surrender. I'm giving this up. I'm not gonna fight this in my own strength anymore. I'm not gonna try to fight this with externals and more rules and more regulations, because a lot of time that just doesn't help. It's getting to the point where I say, okay, Lord, I'm surrendering everything to you. And I'm finding that in my life, I can't run from anything that's trying to hurt me without running to God. And sometimes we just focus on that one part of do not, you know, try harder. You got to stop doing this. Well, we know that. I knew that. But it wasn't until I shifted my focus from what that thing was to a God who was greater, and started making that my focus. You know what? I'm not going to focus on not doing. I'm going to focus on getting closer to God. I'm going to surrender more of my life to Him. It may be just 15 minutes in the morning tomorrow, but I'm going to start with that. I'm going to surrender more of my life to Him. And I found that the things that I couldn't get past for years and a decade just kind of fell right off because of surrender. And so this morning, what I want to do is I want to just invite us all, because I don't think that this ends. I think that there's always stuff in our life trying to fight for the number one spot. And we're always at a point where we gotta lay some things down in our life. You know, I just read yesterday about Abraham, and Abraham prayed for a son, this promised son, for so long, and God said, I want you to lay the son down on Mount Moriah. And God was taking what he had wanted for so long. And it wasn't that he wanted him to give it up completely. He just wanted to know that he was first place. God ended up restoring. He had the whole thing worked out. But the key was with Abraham was, will you surrender this to me? Because I want to see that you got the faith to do it. I want to see that, okay, I'm first priority in your life. And sometimes God will do that. He'll put his hand on something. And he'll say, you know what, this might be a little too important. I think this is taking life from you. This is hurting you. I want you to lay this down. So I just want us to bow our head this morning. And I know this is kind of a tough message, but I believe when we surrender our hearts to God, when we really surrender to Him, He can do so much. And it could be something that we have fought and struggled with for a long time. And sometimes it's just a simple prayer. Just, Lord, I give this to you. I have been fighting this same thing for years. I've been fighting this feeling of abandonment. Somebody left me and I feel alone and I can't trust anybody anymore. God, I just lay that down. I've been fighting this depression. I don't know how to get out of it. I've tried everything I know to try and it keeps coming back. Lord, I just lay it down at your feet today. I've been fighting this addiction and it runs in my family. I got it honestly. And I keep fighting this thing, but it keeps coming back. Lord, I surrender it. I surrender it. It's a daily surrender, saying, Lord, this isn't my body. This is your body. The things that are going on in my mind and inside of my soul and inside of my body, Lord, this my body's not my own. It's your temple. I want it to be set apart, Lord. I don't want to struggle with this stuff the rest of my life. I surrender it down to you today. So, Lord, this morning we do that. We just surrender to you. God, we ask that you would use our lives for your glory. I pray even right now, Father, for just strength and peace. God, that even just momentum and the strength to fight again. that sometimes we struggle with something so long, we just give up fighting it. We just give up. I don't think I can beat this. I just pray even a spirit of fight right now, just to come, that I'm not going to let this dictate my life. I'm not going to allow this to control my attitude, my moods. And right now, in this moment, you should just right now, just draw a line in the sand. Enough is enough, God. I'm surrendering this to you. I'm giving this to you. In Jesus' name. And everybody said amen.